So we're going to turn together this evening to 1 Samuel chapter 1. If you're using a Bible from the bench in front of you, that begins on page 280. So we're starting a new book of the Bible. We know the Bible is composed of 66 different books. The Old Testament's composed of 66 different books, all bound together into one coherent story and message because God is the ultimate author of all these books. But each individual book, of course, has its character and setting and place. And when you open a new book or when you start into a new story, one of the things any good author will begin with is giving you a sense for who the characters are. And I think this is what the author of 1 Samuel does in 1 Samuel chapter 1. We have the character, we have the conflicts that are going to kind of play themselves out in the rest of this story. The story has left off in the end of the book of Judges. The last verse of the book of Judges, many of you probably remember this, it says, "And everyone did what was right in their own eyes." Everyone did whatever pleased them. Everyone did as he saw fit, I think is how the NIV translates the last verse of the book of Judges. So there's moral chaos. There's this climate of unrest, of disorder. And there's no solid leadership among God's people at this point in the story. And in many ways, I find that parallel to what we experience in our society and our culture now. Everyone's kind of running around doing what they think is right. And it's chaotic and it's hard to see through. And 1 Samuel is the emergence of leadership amongst God's people. So as we read this first chapter, be thinking about these new characters. Who are they? What are their joys? What are their burdens? What are they all about? I'll be thinking about that, keeping that in mind as we read 1 Samuel chapter 1, the whole chapter, verses 1 through 28. "There was a certain man from Ramathaim, a Zuphite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jeroham, the son of Elu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her. And the Lord had closed her womb. And because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, 'Hannah, why are you weeping? Don't you eat? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow, saying, 'O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head.' As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart. Her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine." "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I'm a woman who is deeply troubled. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you've asked of him." She said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord and went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah lay with Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah conceived and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, which saying, "Because I asked the Lord for him." When the man Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, "After the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always." "Do what seems best to you," Elkanah, her husband, told her. "Stay here until you've weaned him. Only may the Lord make good his word." So the woman stayed home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. When they had slaughtered the bull, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, "As surely as you live, my lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord." And he worshiped the Lord there. This is God's holy word. I wonder, thinking about characters, thinking about what's going on, what your first impressions are in the book of 1 Samuel. And tonight, as I said earlier, I've studied this material for a long time and feel I'm comfortable enough to kind of edit some of these things on the fly. And I wanted to make this series a little bit more interactive. So, at risk of listening to crickets chirp, maybe, who has maybe a sentence that they would like to throw out there? First impressions of 1 Samuel chapter 1 and these characters that we're suddenly introduced to. Anybody? Yes, Sam. Yeah, okay. So there's a lot of conflict within this family. Yep. Anybody else? Yeah, James.
Samuel's father, he had some great points. He was worshiping the Lord, but I mean, he was kind of, the way it sounds to my ear anyway, it seems like I could just whatever.
Yeah. Elkanah, the first character that we're introduced here in 1 Samuel, is someone who's trying to be faithful. I mean, he's going to church, if you will. He's the one that's keeping a commitment to worshiping the Lord. And then this temple at Shiloh is where the tabernacle kind of settles. So this is the semi-permanent place. This is where people go to make sacrifices to the Lord. This is before God chooses Jerusalem and establishes a more permanent temple there. So Shiloh, which is maybe 10 miles north of Jerusalem, is kind of the center of worship now. And remember in the book of Judges, we have a lack of leadership. There's a lot of immorality going on. And then we had the book of Ruth that shows one family that is faithful. And so we can't make like these sweeping stereotypes that just everybody is unfaithful or everybody is. It's a mixture. And so, yeah, we have Elkanah as someone who is making these pilgrimages. He's keeping commitments to the Lord. He's worshiping as the Lord has commanded to be worshiped. Who has anything else they want to share? Yeah, Agnes. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Hannah is this mother in 1 Samuel that is the precursor to, of course, Samuel, who's the book is named after. He's one of the main characters in this book. Hannah is naturally speaking, we could say, is not able to give birth. We see that this is in God's hands. And then he allows her to conceive and have a son. So we said Elkanah is a faithful man. He's seeking to lead his family in faith. He's obeying God's will for worship. But there's something about him that's not something we want to emulate as husbands and heads of our household. Elkanah here, of course, he has two wives, which is a problem in and of itself. I mean, polygamy is never God's ideal for marriage. He allowed it in the Old Testament, I think, in many ways, the way he allowed divorces to happen a little more loosely than I believe the New Testament allows for them. So there's a less than ideal family situation. You have two wives and they're clearly rivals. And they're provoking each other, especially Peninnah is provoking Hannah. What we have is a picture of two women and both want what the other one has, right? Peninnah wants the love of her husband and she doesn't have it because she has a whole bunch of children. Hannah wants a child. And so here's the conflict. Both want what the other has. And the question that Agnes mentions is, what do you do with that pain? Or what are you going to do with that grief, that situation? We have Peninnah takes it out on Hannah. I mean, she just irritates her. She kind of drives her a little crazy. She's jealous. She's ruthless. Hannah is suffering from mild depression, maybe even a mild sort of disordered eating. She can't eat. She's so upset. And so Elkanah has these two wives, and Peninnah is vicious, and Hannah is the one that seems to have the least power in this situation. She's kind of the victim, if you will. She seems weak. Now here's something that none of us should do. Elkanah doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do when his wives are at each other's throats. So he does what a lot of us men do. Can't you just be happy? Why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why this? Why that? A lot of times why questions, especially from us males, are kind of our undercover way of, I just wish you would just stop. But if you give me a reason, I can say, well, let's solve the reason, let's just fix you, and let's have this done. And Elkanah does something that's fairly insensitive, but I think it's something that we're tempted to do from time to time. Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Why are you sad? Aren't I good enough? I mean, we think this way and we feel this way when our wives are unhappy. We feel like we're not providing well enough, right? And so we say, count your blessings. Come on, I'm one of them, right? Or get over this. And that's not helpful. This is not a model of good empathy from a husband to a wife here. And so Hannah is provoked by this rival wife, and her husband is just kind of wants her to get over it. And so we're told that one episode when this happens, verse 9, Hannah stood up. And the Hebrew there actually doesn't mean she just stood up and stood there. She stood up and walked out. She's like, I've got to get myself out of this situation. She walks out, and she walks to the temple. And Hannah here brings her griefs to the Lord. When Hannah was experiencing all this at the dinner table, being provoked once again and not understood by her husband, she did the mature thing. Instead of losing her temper and yelling at people about how insensitive they were, she just stood up and put some boundaries and put a little bit of distance there. And by the grace of God, she left to go out to the temple and she prayed. Hannah did an amazing thing here. She took all her hurt, her bitterness, everything in her heart from her chaotic life circumstances, she took this and turned it over to God in prayer. One of my favorite Old Testament scholars describes a situation like this. Hannah made her situation liquid in tears, not in self-pity, but getting it out of herself in prayer. You can't just bottle up your pain. You can pour it out before God. And this is what Hannah does. She pours out her troubles before God. And in that moment, God begins a healing work in her life. Before she conceives and has a child, the Bible says her face is no longer downcast. So God starts. He doesn't simply give her a child to solve her problem. God gives her the space and the empathy to let her pour out her griefs before him. And as we pull the camera back and look at a wide-angle lens, we see the bigger picture for Samuel. Here God is not simply beginning to heal Hannah, but through Hannah, he's beginning a healing work in his own people, in Israel, because it's through God's strength that she transforms this situation with all its evil into something good. Hannah takes her abstinence from wine of the sacrifice and turns it into a Nazirite vow. Hannah prays in verse 11, "If you only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head." If Hannah would be given a son, she would dedicate him completely to the Lord under the Nazirite vow that no product of grape would ever touch his mouth, no razor would ever be used to cut his hair. Samuel is kind of a new Samson-like character, if you're thinking about connecting Judges to 1 Samuel, but Samuel will not be known as someone who has physical strength. He will be someone who has spiritual strength. A most devout prayer and the pouring out of one's soul before God is taking place. And then we're introduced to, I believe, the fourth character I have listed on your outline, Eli. Eli is the priest. Eli is the one who is caretaker of the temple, and Eli completely misses the boat. He interprets a heartfelt prayer of anguish as drunkenness. Eli is spiritually out of tune. He's spiritually inept, as the first impression gives us in this story. Eli Eli's reaction is to make a snap judgment. He thinks he's looking at a drunk woman. The irony of the whole thing is that she has had no wine. She's the one that left the dinner and has not had wine. She's been too distressed to drink it away. She has just made a commitment for her son to be a Nazirite, if she's given one. The priest of the temple misses this completely. The high priest is supposed to have sympathy for the people. Eli completely misunderstands. So here's another small picture of what's going on in the bigger reality of Israel. The leadership, the spiritual leadership, is just not in touch with the things of God at this point. But Hannah's patient, and she doesn't ask for a perfect church leader. She interacts with a church leader God has given her. And God uses kind of misunderstood and misunderstanding Eli to serve his purpose. So he says, go in peace and may God grant you what you've asked for. And Hannah walks away, a changed person. She left, she ate. We read that her face is no longer downcast. Her pain has been heard by God, the most important person to hear and heal our pain. And so Elkanah takes the family home, and soon after that, God gives Hannah a son who she names Samuel. Hannah takes her son until he is weaned and then brings him to the temple, and Hannah dedicates her son to the Lord and follows through on her promise. I can imagine her running into Eli again, right? Remember me? I was a woman you thought was drunk. I was praying. You thought I was crazy, but God has given me a son, and he's going to serve you under you. You're going to be his mentor. A tension there, right? It's not ideal, but it's what God uses. He uses kind of the messiness and the real situations to be at work through. And this young boy named Samuel, God is provisioning new leadership for Israel. That's a big word, provisioning. I want to explain it a little bit. Back when I worked on computers and in technology, we would provision new systems. We would put different pieces of equipment in a big rack, screw it in the wires. We had to provision it, saying, okay, this is where the space, this is going to go. This is the space, this is going to go. Here are the 12 wires that need to go to this piece of equipment and where they need to run. And we provisioned all of that. We got it all prepared and ready. If you're planning already what's going to be planted in what field, that's kind of provisioning. And then you're going to get your equipment ready. You're going to order the seed. You're going to do everything to get ready for that new crop. God is now provisioning for a leadership change in Israel. He's creating the circumstances, and his hand is guiding providentially what's going on here. And this new leadership is being provisioned through this child named Samuel. He is now this hope, and he represents a new order of things, a change, a new chapter in Israel's history is found in this boy named Samuel. So these are the characters, and we're introduced to them. We learn what they're a bit about. Of course, we've already mentioned some of the conflicts, but let's cover those briefly. We have this conflict between Hannah and Peninnah. We know how that played out. Peninnah represents kind of the oppressive, powerful party. Hannah is the humble, meek one, who again pours her cares out to the Lord. We have this tension between current and future leaders, Eli representing kind of the current leaders of Israel's spiritual walk. Samuel represents the new chapter of leaders. And you can feel that tension between misunderstood old leaders and what God is providing for new leaders. This woman is interpreted as being wrong when she is pouring out her heart before God. And then, of course, we have this tension of power and brokenness. Elkanah just wants the problem fixed. He wants to snap his fingers, say the right words, and everything will be fine again. Hannah has to go through a process of being broken and humble in order to prepare this boy to be a leader of God's people. We like to flee from brokenness. We want to avoid this at all costs. And 1 Samuel chapter 1, I think, is an invitation for us to acknowledge our brokenness and bring it before God. Sometimes He might solve your problem, if you will. He might provide you a child. He might provide you a cure. He might provide what you're looking for, but there are many, many occasions in the Bible where He doesn't. Where He says, like He said to the Apostle Paul, "My strength is sufficient. My power is made perfect in weakness." There's no rhyme or reason. We can't explain why God answers some prayers with yes and some prayers with not at this time and some prayers with no, never. But God calls us and invites us always to pour out our cares and our concerns before Him. And it's in that process that God can start something new in our lives. And He does that here in 1 Samuel chapter 1. Now to conclude this, I want to tie this to Christmas because I think it's kind of clear how some of this even foreshadows the coming of Christ. We have a new chapter and a new hope found in the birth of a child. A woman who is, naturally speaking, doesn't seem to be able to conceive, but comes before God with humility and submissiveness. Hannah's prayer in 1 Samuel chapter 2 is a lot like Mary's song in Luke chapter 1, a celebration of what God is doing through the child that she is bearing. And we're not going to look at it, but if you want to read through something that's quite encouraging, read 1 Samuel chapter 2 in the week ahead. Hannah's prayer and how she brings not only her pain, but now her celebration before God and praises His name. Ultimately, Samuel points to Jesus Christ, who was born in a lowly, humble family. But God was going to use him and work through him to bring about the deliverance and a new leadership among His people. And so as we conclude our time in 1 Samuel chapter 1 this morning, remember who we follow. Remember that God used the brokenness of Christ to save us from our sins and to begin a new era in the history of our world. God uses our brokenness, our emptying of ourself, our pouring out our pain before Him, to start a new work in our lives as well.